I'm going to adjust my... Hey, we're live! We're live! This is actually happening! It's been... how long have we talked about doing a podcast, Alan?
3 years?
Yeah, see, that's about it. Dave has actually been a guest star on Shoes in the Living Room, which is the podcast I do with Allison. And she misses you terribly, Dave. So I certainly
I miss her.
Granted, you are doing your life's work up there in hell.
I don't know about that. I'm doing work. I'll give you that.
I'm trying to figure out what kind of work that might be. So I want to welcome anybody who ever hears and or watches this. This is a brand new podcast. We don't know what the hell we're doing. But there's myself, Shane, who lives in Vancouver, BC. And who else is here? Starting with Up Island.
Oh. Sure. Dave. And
what do you do, Dave?
I'll say near Courtney, because most people would just be like, Vancouver Island, okay, that's cute. And then if you're outside of Victoria, forget about it. So we'll just say Courtney.
It's close to Courtney, just not as tall or high or north or something. And of course, in Victoria, holding up the lower half of Vancouver Island.
Yes.
Who are you?
I'm Alan.
Atlas.
Atlas? He's referred to Atlas.
Right, I'm holding up.
Holding up the island.
Oh, it took me a moment. So what this podcast, we hope, is going to be about this stuff, which you can, of course, see beer and man talk.
Boobies.
Because there's a lot of podcasts out there that cover all kinds of topics, but there's very few that talk about the sensible men in the world, of which us three were very sensitive and sensible men. Would you agree?
Boobies!
There goes half our viewership out the door before we even started. Well done, boys. Well done. So, I'm not sure what the how our sort of process is going to be here about how to actually do the show. But essentially, Alan and myself have been talking about doing a podcast for 3 years-ish. And the ideas have sort of flown around, bounced around. And I think it was last week or the week before, one of us kind of said, hey, are we actually going to do this? And so here we are. So I had this evening free, and I said, let's do this, and Dave happened to call me out of the blue, and I'm like, Dave, we're doing it tonight! You're a man, do you have a penis? Great! 9 o'clock! You're gonna be here, and we're gonna do this!
That's the only requirements for being a guest on our show.
Pretty much. I mean, really, we only have certain parts of our anatomy that become the... See, here's the thing. I'm balking at saying that you have to have a penis because I was watching this documentary a couple days ago about transgendered people who are sort of on the fence about what gender they want to be, or they don't feel male, they prefer to be female or whatever. And I thought, well, they still have the parts. And I said that in my mind. Nicely done, Dave. I said that in my mind. About, well, you're a guy if you have a penis. And then, 2 minutes later in the documentary, there was, this 25-minute tirade about that attitude, about saying that, if you think that having male junk is what defines you as being a male, then you're a dick. So you know what I mean. But so I felt really bad because I didn't quite realize that there was that much entrenched kind of anti-junk thought or attitude. So that's just my little anecdote for last weekend being up way too late at night and having access to Netflix. So By the way, this episode is, I don't know, actually, we have no name for the show, really. We've, again, tossed around ideas. And Dave, I always ask Dave, Dave, what's that cool name you thought of? And then I always, you know, the Shaftingham Chronicles, I think, or something along those lines.
Shaftingham Chronicles was one of them, yes.
Yeah, it was that. Now, Alan, what? There was something else, I think, that you thought of actually just not too, like, 3 or 4 months ago. You thought of a cool name.
Well, I think it was, like, a couple weeks ago. I said, Shane and Alan get bombed.
Oh, well, okay. That works.
Bombed with Shane and Alan, something like that.
So this and here's the cool part about doing this kind of stuff, because it is all about the culture of our country. Would you guys say that you're hardcore Canadians?
Yeah, pretty much. No.
You're taking too long, Dave.
Just say yes. It'll all be better soon. No, I would say no.
You're not a hardcore Canadian. What are you then? No. Then elaborate, because I'm curious to know why you don't feel Canadian.
Well, because I've always, I don't know why, but I've always really kind of identified with my European roots for some strange reason.
Sorry, I didn't hear you because I had to, hang on.
Where'd he go?
It's time for our special guest.
Our first guest of the show. This is Serendipity the Pug, who's very happy at letting everybody know that she's unhappy. you go be good. Sorry, say that again, Dave, because I'm actually really interested. I want to know why you don't feel that you are a hardcore Canadian, because that's highly disturbing to me, sir.
Oh, really? Well, I've always kind of identified with my European roots, I guess.
So you're feeling very much like you are a Norwegian separatist. okay, actually,
fuck is going on here?
The real question is, what is that? Now, I think, is it Norse or Swedish? What are we talking about here? Because you're, you know, or we go in full on German, you know, blonde hair, blue eyed, you know, that kind of thing.
I'm not tall enough.
You're not tall enough?
I've got the blonde hair and I've got the blue eyes, but no, I don't make the cut.
No, so you're Finnish then, is that right?
No, I'm Dutch.
Which is actually, I had no idea.
Which makes things even more funny, because the Dutch are actually quite tall.
Well, the problem is that everybody in Europe hates the Dutch anyway, so...
I don't think Dave can be on this show anymore.
I think, Dave, I'm sorry, we're going to have to ask you to leave. I'm sorry. There are limits to our desires for the show, and one of them is to include the Dutch. So
just you and me, Alan, that's it, we're done. That's all we have left.
Roll credits.
Thank you for all watching episode 1. So this brings us no closer to finalizing a name, but I don't think we need to quite finalize it at this point, because the name, the episode title that I did just randomly shoot out with was The Beer and the Savages. So
we're the savages, man.
Nice.
We're the savages.
I like it.
So there you go. That's kind of my unflattering angle. Look at that. I'm not too wild about the angle I've got on my camera, so I'll have to adjust that at some point. Dave hasn't had a chance to pick up his beer yet, so he's going to be left out of the beer component here of today.
Way to go, Dave.
Yes.
So,
I was looking forward to trying this one, too, actually.
I know. Well, it's... okay, well... Alan, you're the one who actually thought of this particular beer for our first inaugural episode.
Yes.
Which is what? The
Fuggles and Warlock. Bean
Fuggles
Me Up,
and Warlock.
Espresso Milk Stout.
Which we had at the Great Canadian Beer Fest in Victoria in September.
Yes, we did.
Oh, look. Everyone, I'd like to welcome to the show. Come here. Allison McGrain, who now has not said a word. I don't know why. But I will point out that she brought this glass over to me merely to just tell me to pour this beer. So I'm gonna record this here. So you can see that this beer is a dark stout. It is... Why is it called a milk stout? Does anybody know? You want more?
Got me.
Is that, I have to... If you can get a glass for Dave, I'll give it to Dave.
Yes, please.
I'm not sure why it's called a milk stout. I don't actually know. I'm going to pour you some, Dave. Here you go. There, you can see that.
Look at that.
Awesome. I'll have to drink it for you, though. So I was actually, that's something I had forgotten to do. But hey, when you're podcasting for the fun and joy of it, that is kind of how you do it. So Alan, talk about Fuggles and Warlock.
Okay, well, Fuggles and Warlock is a new brewery out of Vancouver, and they their slogan is keeping beer weird, and they certainly do that. I'm just looking up what a milk stout is here, so sorry.
I'm dying to know.
It's a stout that's containing lactose, which is the sugar, of course, derived from milk. Because lactose is unfermentable by beer yeast, it adds sweetness, body, and calories to the finished beer. Milk stout was claimed to be nutritious and was given to nursing mothers, interesting, along with other stouts such as Guinness. I got that off of Wikipedia.
Something I learned about milk stout, or not milk stout, sorry, about Guinness just a few days ago is that apparently it has the least number of calories in it, which I had no idea.
Not really.
But apparently it is the least caloric stout, which means that I'll just drink more of it.
So anyway, getting back to the Fuggles and Warlock, at the Great Canadian Beer Festival this past September in Victoria, they had a booth, and their lineup was huge. I mean, it was three to four times bigger than anybody else's lineup. They ran out of beer before everybody else, and a lot of it was this Beam Me Up Espresso Stout, but they also had some other kinds of beers that were really good, including a strawberry wit, which was like having like strawberry juice or something.
Yeah, they had three casks, I think, that were continually running. Unfortunately, their website is a little how shall I say?
Lacking?
Lacking in information, because the info is kind of... Whoa, I've really gone blurry. I'm blurry! It's unfortunate because they have
focus.
Some... Yeah, it's like, focus! What the hell? But essentially, they were good across the board because we tried all three of their beers, and I was not... I wanted to... And I think we went back like two or three times.
Yeah, we did.
So...
Which is hard to do with such long lineups.
Yeah, it's true. So, but overall, I give the them a thumbs up. So now, I'm sorry, Dave, but you're going to have to suffer through this. this is the component where we drink this beer. All right, Alan.
Clinky. Cheers.
Let me do that again into the microphone. Okay, I gotta give it up for that beer. That's better than good.
You know, I've had a lot of espresso stouts before, and none of them had like this kind of flavor. You know, this kind of espresso flavor in it. So yeah, I mean, I'm really impressed.
Well, the big thing I like about this one is that it is so incredibly not overpowering, because I've had stuff that has flavoring in it. You know, you get like a raspberry lager of some sort or whatever, and you kind of have to deal with you know, the overpowering flavor. You lose the idea that it's actually beer. Alan, who's there? Who's there?
Erin is here, and she would like to make some popcorn.
We should bring her on camera for a sec just so that she can ask the question to everybody.
Ask what question?
I have no idea. The popcorn question.
I need to ask the popcorn question.
Pop the question.
This is annoying me, this whole non-having...
Well, if you want to do it again,
focus. Yeah, there we go.
Okay.
We'll edit that part out.
Okay, that is awesome.
Of all times to choose to make popcorn, she chooses now.
Well, that's the best part about doing podcasting.
Done it all night.
That's the best part is that you have these. I have pugs. I have a few podcasts that every week I run into the problem where there's pugs involved because they just bark or make noise, and I have tried for years to make them very silent. But the problem is, I've had actually feedback from the podcast asking, "Hey Shane, we didn't have any pugs this week," and it sort of became a thing where I was having to make sure that the pugs were making noise at some point. So I would actually egg them on. I'd mute the microphone if other people were talking, and I'd be like, "Hey, do you guys want to go outside or eat some food?" And of course, when you mention food to them, they just go apeshit. They're like, "Oh my God, feed me now!" So, you know, then I just get these barks. And of course, they'd look at me funny because I would be like, "Ah, screw you guys for getting fed." And they, of course, would just sit at my feet and look sad. So that was kind of not a very good thing. I'm a bad man. I totally forgot. So anyway, so we've determined what a milk stout is, somewhat. It's a very light flavor, and I like it. The stout part of it still tastes, I don't know, stouty? Is that a way to describe it, though?
It tastes, you know, meaty to me, like a stout should. Like, you could put a spoon in it, and it should stand up. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But
it sounds just like a good coffee.
Well,
it has a hint of coffee.
It has more than a hint of coffee. Like, I've had some where the coffee is really a hint. You can barely taste it. But in this, you definitely taste it. I mean, this is kind of like, I can imagine having this instead of an iced coffee on a hot summer day. So Erin's making her popcorn right now, so.
I can't hear it, so it's fine.
No, I can't hear it either, actually.
Oh, you can't?
No. Well, that's the nice thing about your microphone, where you can control the gain, right? So, what man things, what man topics are we talking about this week? We've talked about our beer. Would you like to try? Allie has glasses for you. It's Fuggles and Warlock. It's a milk stout. It's yummy.
Who's there?
Some of the craft people that Allison meets with on Wednesday night, they're all crafting it up. So so what man topics have we got? We've talked about the beer. We like the beer. Fuggles and Warlock, if you haven't had it, I do recommend it. But what man topics have we got this week, boys?
How about wood chopping?
Wood chopping. Yes, I like wood chopping.
Or something.
Dave, you live in the sticks. How's the wood cutting going on this part of the year?
It's not. I didn't get enough done, actually. I was supposed
to
be...
So basically, you're freezing. You haven't been able to heat your home because of the wood chopping lack? Is that...
Dad bought some, of course.
Oh, he bought some wood. Was it pre-cut? Did you have to go outside in the backyard and cut it for him?
I did some. I only managed about a cord, though.
Did you have to wear flannel? Wait,
no, but I've got these big baggy green jeans that I wore to do it.
Nice. Actually, my parents...
Did you put on women's clothing?
What? Say again?
Did you put on women's clothing and hang around in bars?
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
Well played. Well played.
One thing I thought we could talk about is...
Yeah.
Okay, now, this is kind of an old episode, I guess, of Big Bang Theory, but I watched it for the first time last week.
Okay.
And in this episode, Sheldon shows his girlfriend, Amy Farrah Fowler, Raiders of the Lost Ark for the first time. And after it's finished, she remarks that Indiana Jones, the character, has absolutely no impact on the story of the movie. That if the character hadn't have been there, the Nazis still would have found the lost ark. They still would have taken it to that island. They still would have opened it, and they all would have died.
I agree, because yeah. You sent me... Dave, he sent a link out the other day about somebody who'd actually gone through the entire plot of Raiders of the Lost Ark. And I agree. You could actually take the Indiana Jones character out, leave the rest of the story to play out. I mean, granted, it might have taken a bit longer for the Nazis to have found...
No, it wouldn't have taken them. It would have taken them less time. The only reason why it took them as long as it did is because Indiana Jones intercepted the medallion for the headpiece.
Oh,
of the
right, of course, right. Because then he would have gone to Marion. They would have been.
They would have gone to Marion.
Dude, and he would have. That's right. They would have like just probably shot her in the face, and that would have been that. And they would have.
That's right.
So am I wrong, or did that just shoot the theory down right there?
What do you mean?
Well, you guys are saying that the whole theory is that you could just write Indy out of the picture and it wouldn't matter.
Yes, exactly. No, that is true. Well, no, you got to remember,
he actually had a big impact on it.
No, not really. He just kind of got in the way.
He just got in the way, and it was lucky that he didn't get killed in the process.
Yeah, no. Well, you think about it. When the Nazis showed up in Nepal to get the medallion from Marion Ravenwood, Indiana Jones, they were there. She told them to get out. They left. But, of course, they left for only a little while going, okay, well, we know the lay of the land. She's going to be there by herself. So let's go back and just kill her. He just happened to be there again because he's like, oh, I'm here and I love you, and then gets slapped and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But if you remove all of that, if you take that entire plot away, so you just take away Indiana Jones, he hasn't come to Nepal, he hasn't shown up, but the Nazis are still going to go there. They're still looking for what they want, right? So they show up, and then they're just like, hey, how's it going, lady? And she's like, get out of here, and then no one tells me what to do in my bar. And then, you know, they might leave, but they'll come back 20 minutes later with machine guns and just, you know, take it away from her. Because you remember, she was wearing
this. The reason why it took them so long to find the Well of Souls is because that weird German guy only had half of the medallion burned onto his hand.
So if they actually had the entire medallion, they would have figured the whole thing out way faster. They would have been in the map room going, there it is, right there. Well, the Well of Souls, we're going to, you know, get in there and get our stuff and leave. And you know, they wouldn't have had to deal with the snakes, they would have had to deal with... you know, the flying wing thing, because that flying wing would have had the arc and it would have been out. There would no one to stop it. So you're right. I mean, they only made three Indiana Jones films. So, you know, they have the...
Are we not counting the fourth?
There's a fourth? Really?
No.
No, they wouldn't have, they wouldn't have done anything with Alien. Oh, wait. Damn it!
Don't forget George Lucas was involved.
Yeah, I gotta say, Dave, I'm assuming you've seen the fourth Indiana Jones film, The Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Yeah.
Yeah.
What did you think? I don't think I've ever asked you, so what did you think of that film?
I try not to.
Yeah, same here. What about you?
But you know...
No.
Alan actually has a good point about this, because he's mentioned this before. So...
Well... I know it's really outlandish, you know, that, you know, the whole thing of the aliens and everything. But really, I mean, everything that happens in the other movies is just as outlandish. People will point to Indiana Jones getting into the fridge and getting blasted from the nuclear blast. He could never survive that. But, I mean, there's lots of things in the first three movies that he did that he should never have survived, but did.
Indy, man.
Have you ever seen there's a YouTube channel that the name escapes me at the moment, but they do this thing called The Total Damage, where they actually calculate, they apparently have a doctor or a series of doctors that work in ERs, and they show the video clips that they want them just to basically evaluate, where, and the first one I saw was Die Hard. and they watched these clips and basically gave the people putting the video together information as to, well, if this had happened to this person in real life, they would have broken this, this, and this. And these are the things that would have damaged, they would have damaged. And they get to the point where they start counting the number of lives in order it takes in order to do to complete the film. So I think Die Hard was like, it would have taken 5 John McClanes to actually complete that film. And then the other ones they did were like the ones the Home Alone films, like both of the Home Alone movies.
Oh, yeah.
Where the criminals, it would have taken them, I think, 4.5 lives or 4 lives each kind of thing to be able to survive that film. So there's all this kind of stuff surrounding what Indiana Jones could have survived. You're right, because what are they? So in the now, discounting stuff like Nazis can't shoot the side of a barn to save their lives, but what other stuff did he do in the first film that would most likely have killed him?
Well, I'm immediately thinking of something from the second film, because I watched it the other night.
Okay.
When the Lao Che airplane
is
all the, you know, the pilots, they bail out. They've taken all the parachutes with them, and he wakes up.
Yeah, right.
And it's like, you know, they're in the air, you know, thousands of feet. So he gets this brilliant idea to get a inflatable raft, and they all jump in the thing and inflate it, and as it's falling, it inflates and acts as kind of like a parachute type of thing. But really? Would that work?
I mean, I've always sort of treated that scene as being somewhat plausible because they are up in the air, but they're
really
about to hit a mountain, so they're not falling, say, you know, 15,000 feet. They only really fall maybe, what, 1,000 feet? Because they land on the side of a mountain. I'm just saying it's somewhat plausible. I'm not saying it's realistic. I'm just saying that it is plausible that in theory, if you were able to inflate something like that big enough that you might survive hitting the side of a mountain. However, it was an inflatable boat, so there's not a whole lot. I mean, the whole idea, the whole thing in the film is that the sides inflate, but there's nothing really underneath. It's just like, you know, a tarp or something that forms the bottom of the boat. So I can't imagine anyone at that speed that might have been somewhat reduced by, you know, a somewhat floaty sort of device impacting the middle of that thing, because they were very much, you know, when they hit the side of the mountain, you can see them in the middle of the boat. Like, they're not at the sides, they're not using any cushioning.
Yeah.
So if you hit the ground, even snow, they most likely wouldn't have survived. I mean, or would have been badly maimed, I would think, at least, because... But again, I'm still kind of like, it is, I guess, plausible in theory, but, you know,
I don't think so at all.
No, not even like a 5%
chance. No, and I'll tell you why. Let me nerd out on you a bit here. Mm-hmm. In physics, you have downward motion, but you also have forward momentum, right? Airplanes go pretty fast. They have to go fast in order to maintain, you know, their airborne-ness, whatever.
Right.
So when they jump out, of the plane,
I'm going to tell you something about physics, and then I'm going to use the word airborneness.
That was amazing. Like, let me tell you about the physics of planes. The airborneness.
Anyway, so not only are they falling, but they're also going forwards at a great amount of speed. And I think that combined thing would turn them basically into paste as soon as they impacted.
But yeah, I don't think they would actually carry the forward momentum.
You know?
Once you start dropping. Well, no, because the force of gravity takes over.
Mm.
So forward momentum gets reduced, even if there was a whole lot. Because don't forget, if you're a parachutist, you're falling straight out of that fucking plane.
Right? That's true.
So I think my take on that is it is plausible. Yeah, I'm not saying it's likely,
really?
But I think
that
is plausible. It's weird, I'll give you that, but I think that it's absolutely possible. And hey, there are folks that have survived
falling from huge heights too, and they've actually survived.
That's true. I mean, like a friend of ours, a family friend, years and years ago, lived in a condo in Victoria, and they lived on the 8th floor, I think, and they moved from one suite to another to a higher floor, and there was actually a difference in the railing on their balcony. So the cat that they had used to, I gather, had some sort of platform it used to sit up on top of, like a cat tree near the edge of the thing or whatever. I don't remember what floor they were on. They weren't on the bottom floor, but they were maybe a floor or two up. Anyway, so they had not put the cat tree out. They had first moved in. They had been there for about 2 days or something. And the cat leapt up onto the railing. Now, the railing on their suite they had before was just a typical, railing. You could put a glass on it. It would stay there kind of thing. But the railing that they had in the new suite was covered with this sort of rounded, sort of decorative kind of thing. So the cat jumped up on this thing and just went right off the edge of the balcony because it couldn't, grab onto this rounded sort of edge. So it fell all those stories and then landed in a freshly dug flower bed. So the people that were taking care of the area had, weeded or done whatever, and this ground was quite soft. So this cat hit that soil and managed to survive because it left this impression in the dirt where there was like this sprawled out cat. That he has a bruising or whatever on his sort of rib cage and whatnot. But ultimately, I mean, if that ground was any harder and didn't give them that sort of resistance, or that lack of resistance, really, then the cat would have been toast. Its innards would have sprayed everywhere or whatever. But wow. Isn't that what happens when people, they jump off like the Golden Gate Bridge? Because the Golden Gate Bridge has these phones and anti-suicide lines that they have sort of throughout the length of the bridge. So if you're up there to jump off, you'll have, in theory, a lifeline where you can call somebody and talk about your woes or whatever. But, I mean, it's like hitting water, right? You jump from that height, you hit water, the water is more like concrete. It's not jumping into your bathtub. Yeah. It's jumping into this thing that's going to tell you, no, I'm sorry, you're not doing that.
You shall not pass.
Well, exactly. So I'm happy to say that I'm surprised, Dave, that you're somebody who's like, yeah, that's actually plausible. Because I think it's plausible. I mean, there's a very slim chance. But I'm also a supporter of what Alan's saying, because, I would say the chance is like 0.0001% of somebody surviving a fall like that.
Never tell me the odds.
Exactly. So, let's stay in the second film. What other times in that film would Indiana Jones not really survive, where he's been given this sort of carte blanche of, you are going to live, and that's just how it's going to be?
Being 10 feet away from burning in molten lava in a volcano thing.
What scene?
Well, in the Molaram lowers him down into the,
Are you talking about her or him?
Oh, I guess it's her, Kate Capshaw.
Yeah, Kate Capshaw. Yeah. Well, actually, it's true. I mean, the impression is that it's just really hot, but it's, I don't know. I kind of with you on that one because that, I don't know. I haven't been dangled over molten lava, but again,
no, me neither.
But again, really? I mean, it would have been really hot. What is the temperature of magma?
Of magma.
Does anybody know this? Okay, I'm gonna Google this.
You Google it.
Average temperature. This is very important information that we're sharing with the world. So, average temperature of.
One thing I remember in the beginning of the movie where they dropped down that poor bastard that ended up getting burned. Like he lit on fire. Like when
true,
he was
before he was dunked. 20, yeah,
before he was like 20 feet away, and with Willie Scott, she didn't. What's up with that?
Google has been very helpful for me right just this moment because it says temperatures of most magmas are in the range of 700 degrees Celsius to 1300 degrees Celsius, but very rare carbonatite melts. The very rare melts maybe as cool as 600 degrees. So basically, most are silicate mixtures, blah, 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 but essentially it's going to be about 1,000 degrees Celsius. So let's see, what is the burning temperature of flesh? I mean, I'm really, right? I mean...
Somebody at your internet company is going to show up at my doorstep. Let's red flag this guy.
Let's see, temperature, here we go. At what temperature does human flesh burn? This is courtesy of Yahoo Answers, by the way.
There's an authoritative source for you.
So basically, people that are burning up is about 14, requires 14 an extended exposure to 1400 degrees Fahrenheit, which is what in... Oh my God! What's 1400 degrees Fahrenheit in Celsius, boys?
Oh, seriously?
A lot.
a lot. 760 degrees. So yeah, I don't know what they mean by how much it requires, like how much exposure to that temperature it requires, but. The average temperature in a crematorium is 1,800 degrees Fahrenheit, so just to burn flesh and bone, and to incinerate any bacteria. So it looks like, but no one really seems to say anything about how long it would take. So essentially...
let's just say this, it's hot.
Yeah, it's hot, and I guess that poor bastard that had his heart taken out and was thrown...
And magically lived.
And magically lived, yeah, that's true. Hey, you have betrayed Shiva.
Kalimar!
Wow, we are nerds. For this time. Okay, so Indiana Jones, you're saying there's really nothing else in that film? I mean, like, we have the mine chase, the cart, which is completely fantastic. I mean, there's no... way anybody would have survived that.
Especially when it jumped off the tracks where the tracks were missing and magically landed where the tracks were.
True. Now, that kind of stuff I can forgive because that sort of thing, okay, sure, the chances of that actually happening are pretty damn slim.
But there is a chance.
But again, I'm back to the very, very small chance that, okay, these rails might actually, you know, hold and this thing might land on it. A lot of the other stuff, like the short round stuff where he's dangling between the two carts and being sort of held by his arms and by his legs,
mm-hmm.
At that speed, I've always thought that, you know, he most likely would have torn apart or at least dislocated something so he couldn't move. But we're not talking about short round, essentially. What else? There's also the stuff...
Well, in the first movie, there was when Indiana Jones went underneath the truck... and slid along the ground under the truck. And then the interesting thing is, in the footage, they never actually show him getting into the truck, like from being on the ground, holding onto the whip, to actually
getting into the truck. Yeah, it's only that scene where you see the whip kind of dangling, and his foot is just disappearing as he's...
Yeah, you know, it's like, how do you get from dragging on the ground? I get that he's pulling himself up on the whip, mm-hmm. but how does he actually pull himself up off the ground in a moving truck and getting himself into the truck?
Muscles.
Manly muscles.
Manly muscles, yes.
We have to talk about muscles.
yeah, I mean,
that's all he's got. What else is he going to do?
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Well, really, I know, he doesn't really have much else, you know, any other choice, but still, I think he dies there.
I mean, yeah, I mean, there's not...
He'd
a whole lot...
He'd certainly be shredded, wouldn't he? It's not like he was wearing leather.
True.
But I wonder if there was actually, because I'm trying to remember the scene, and was it not a stunt guy that went under the truck?
Well, of course.
We're not talking about movie magic. We're talking about reality, man. Like, hello, get with the program, Dave. We're talking about reality.
If
look at films like
reality,
what was
his
the
pants would have been shredded.
Well, that too.
Perfectly pressed.
His clothing would have been completely just thrashed. What was I going to say? Oh, films like Teen Wolf with what's-his-face car surfing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In the way that he did. So, you know, there's no way in hell that somebody would have been able to... I mean, granted, in the film, they're trying to say, well, this guy's a wolf. So, but again, it was something they did on a regular basis where they, the car surfing was a thing, I guess, where they grew up or whatever. So apparently Michael J. Fox is magic. So that's really all there is to that, I guess.
So staying on the Indiana Jones theme here.
Yeah.
I want to see what you guys think. Disney, who...
I was just going to say, you're going to bring up Chris Pratt.
Yeah.
Because this was just today or yesterday?
Yesterday, actually. They're considering making new Indiana Jones movies, but replacing Harrison Ford with Chris Pratt to be the hero.
Huh.
Shane.
Okay, given that he just did last summer one of the best films I've ever seen, which was, of course, Guardians of the Galaxy. Mainly because Guardians of the Galaxy, the reason I think it's so amazing is that it's a modern film, but it also, what's the phrase, takes people back to the 80s. I guess it's one thing, like my particular generation, our particular generation. Mm. You know, we have a love for films that were done at that point because they are fantastical. There's Indiana Jones, E.T., and all these sorts of things that have these stories that are underneath that are using that sort of magic realism to make them happen. And Back to the Future, especially. Where the fuck is my hoverboard, goddammit? But if that had only been the only thing I had seen Chris Pratt in, because I've seen a little bit of Parks and Rec, which is... I haven't fallen in love with it, but... I have seen some stuff of his, like scenes of him in it, because you know when Guardians of the Galaxy was coming out, people were like, "Who the hell is Chris Pratt?" So I was doing the same thing because I didn't know who the guy was because I had not seen Parks and Rec, which is kind of his claim to fame. But then the trailer for Jurassic World came out, and Jurassic World, I think, would have been served better by somebody like the original park ranger from Jurassic Park. You know, the guy's a clever girl, then he gets eaten. That's kind of the character I would have thought that would have been somebody that would suit that role. So, of course, I saw the trailer. The trailer comes up. You see what's-his-face doing his thing. And then he has that stupid line... which just, for me, yanked the rug out from underneath that character entirely, which was they're looking at, like, claw marks in some fence or something, and they're like, well, what kind of, you know, dinosaur are we dealing with here? And he's like, whatever they cooked up in that lab. And I just, you know, I'm like, dude, come on, you could have delivered that line so much better. It made me actually believe that you were some sort of seasoned character, because, I mean, you have to forgive a lot of things with Jurassic Park, but... They treated the material so well, like it was a real place, at least to me anyway, and they did even more so in Lost World. And I remember actually, Alan, going with you to the cinema out in Langhelford, whatever the hell it's called. Langhelford. And we went and saw it, and it was just an amazing film because you had all the stuff that was similar to the first film, but with a couple of connecting characters that, you know, eventually sort of, you know, and they just did some things you're kind of like, well, you would have died there, but whatever. But still, the characters were a lot more alive than I thought this trailer that just came out was about. I mean, I discount Jurassic Park 3 entirely because as far as I'm concerned, that film doesn't exist either. But so I'm excited for Jurassic World, but I'm really not sold on that particular character yet. The other ones, I mean, they're scientists and kids going to the park and all that kind of stuff, and that's fine. But just that, if he's going to be the central character, if he's going to be the Alan Grant of Jurassic World,
yeah.
I don't know. I'm still doing this, though. I'm still hoping that it does work and that my fear is going to be, you know, will be massaged away when we see whatever the full trailer is, which I gather is attached to something. I forgot what the film is. It's attached to some other film that's supposed to be coming
out. That's probably a good way to do it, attach it to something.
Well, no, but there was a particular film that we are releasing the trailer with this film only, and I don't know what the hell it is.
Dave, what do you think of continuing on to Indiana Jones? Not Jurassic Park, but Indiana Jones.
Please, let's go back to Indiana Jones, because Jurassic Park is making me sad.
With a different actor, Chris Pratt or not.
I mean, you know what? I think somebody should just cook up a new fucking idea.
And get away from the Jurassic Parks anything?
Indy has been done. And as far as I'm concerned, Indy is Harrison Ford.
Yeah, me too.
You know, it's just because we are the age we are. We grew up with Harrison Ford. But, and you know what, too? How many hundreds of freaking ideas are floating around Hollywood right now? New ideas, fresh ideas. And whether or not they use this actor, who cares? But the point is,
yeah, fuck him.
Done.
Fuck him. Just fuck him.
I thought he was funny. I got no beef with him. But let's get some fresh ideas, man. Let's do something new.
All I can say is that it's not Shia LaBeouf.
I think we can all agree on
that. I mean, I gotta say, I think that LaBeouf guy, I think he has talent. I think he's got somewhere to go, like his career has to go somewhere, but I think his career is really going to take off when he's a bit older, because his public behavior and rumored craziness. Granted, did you guys ever see that Shia LaBeouf video where they're talking about how Shia LaBeouf is a cannibal?
No.
Have you seen this?
No.
So you check it out. Google on YouTube Shia LaBeouf cannibal, and you'll find it. It's like this musical troupe. Improv comedy group. They got together with a choir and some dancers, and they do this big, huge production. And the ending is the payoff. So check it out.
What?
You should check it out. I'm serious. It's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant, and it kind of humanizes that LaBeouf guy. So essentially, Indiana Jones, we're thinking, would have died several thousand times in his adventures.
Oh, absolutely.
What about his escape What about his escape from the first temple in the first film?
What do you mean from the big
would
rock?
Would he have died from anything in there when he's running away from the rolling rock or anything else?
The like 500 spiders that were on him.
Okay. 500 spiders. Okay. Then we also
those are not absolutely lethal, right?
The tarantulas are not lethal?
I would have run away screaming.
Yes, me too.
Alan had a problem with me having one spider, so
I know, story.
By the way, I did call the bug zoo in Victoria while I was there, and Stumpy is alive and well. And is apparently breeding still, so there you go. And apparently has now racked up more than 50,000 offspring, so congratulations.
Way to go, Stumpy.
Yeah, wonderful. Stumpy turned out to be a girl. I thought it was a dude, but apparently not. Not that I'm an expert in spiders, but still, I thought I had a male spider.
That still weirds me out, dude.
That I had a spider, or that you...
You are the only human being that I know personally that had a desire to have a fucking spider in his room.
Okay, wait a second. Let me clarify that I did not desire to have a spider. A pet store went out of business,
and the terrorists forced you to take it.
And
at
the terrorists
gunpoint.
Forced me to take the spiders under my care.
Yeah.
ooh, holy yolks, though.
And Allie looks over in horror.
By the way, Allison, you're in frame, by the way, and they just commented on your reaction to my manliness.
And she quickly disappears.
Allison is I totally forgot what the hell I was going to say. I'm sure I had some reasonable point, but maybe not. So, in the third film, Indiana Jones, dead multiple times, or would he have survived that? I'm trying to think of any really terrible things he might have done that would have killed him outright, but I can't think of any. But
well, I think off the top of my head, it's when he was getting dragged by the tank, and he was
his strap
for his bag was hanging over the.
Well, that entire scene is movie magic, because there's no way in hell that his pack would have wrapped around that turret the way it did.
And he didn't even unhook himself when he got back onto the tank.
That is movie magic at its best, where it's like, oh my god, we gotta push him off the thing, and you know he's gotta get hooked on something, but who cares? Just wrap the thing around the turret, then when he gets up, you know, just magically have it pass through solid metal.
And going further with that, when the tank goes over the cliff, he magically grabs onto some roots and pulls himself up.
That's true. Can you be toasted?
While he's still connected via his bag to the turret of this tank.
he was kind of
that, right?
Face there. I mean, then of course you see
I can't remember the scene. So,
well, when the tank goes over, he's stumbling around fighting the Nazi dude, and
on top
of
it,
as
right?
the tank is supposedly going.
They're on top of it. They're duking it out
on top of the tank. Yeah, they're duking it out. So over he went, the tank, and then there's a scene of, or like a brief shot of him going, whoa, and then leaping sort of to the back of the tank. And then the next thing you see is the tank has already gone over, and then you have like dude face sort of holding on to, the top of the turret going, and then, you know, then suddenly he's, he hits the ground and the turret falls off. Actually, what pisses me off about that film is that they had that thing where the turret falls off, and then the next shot, it's the tank rolling over again, the turret's attached, with no trace of where the guy might have gone.
I thought that was a little sloppy.
Well, I just thought, you know, of all those films, you know, it is fantastical, it's crazy, but really, you already established that the turret fell off. So, I mean... And that's the thing with tanks, right? The turrets aren't really, you know, they're on there with gravity. They're not really being, you know, not bolted in or anything, because they're turning and all kinds of stuff. So if you turn a tank over, it's going to fall off anyway. So I'm saying shame on you, special effects
Spielberg.
People, whoever, Phil Tippett or whoever the hell it was. Although I think Tippett's more of a puppet guy. But anyway, randomly just choosing names out of a hat. Of people that I've seen in interviews doing cool films that don't get made anymore.
We'll just randomly cast aspersions here.
There's probably very few scenes in that film. I mean, there's probably something about the boat chase maybe in Venice. The gas well under Venice, which was funny.
Could you swim underwater with your eyes open in a pool of gas?
Well, I don't think you could. You've got to get back up on these films. If you're like, what scene are you talking about? The scene where he's in Venice and he's done the blonde and then he's walking around.
But you're saying underwater in a pool of gas. What is it?
In the scene, he and Elsa are in the catacombs, and they're apparently submerging themselves in petrol. Now, okay, I don't know much about gas, but I know that it will float on top of water. So maybe that's the only way that got pulled off. I don't know.
I mean, it was natural gas, right?
Yeah, but it would still float on top of water, I would think.
Yeah.
So maybe his eyes, but again, you're submerging yourself in you know.
I mean, I would think it would hurt your eyes.
I would think it would burn your eyes out. Like,
yeah,
totally.
They
weren't in the gas; they were in the water, underneath the gas.
Okay, natural gas safety. When you're exposed to natural gas, you will get headaches, nausea, dizziness, drowsiness, or fatigue, burning eyes, confusion, unconsciousness, loss of coordination, and death. All This is my favorite part. Call 911. So, not going to happen in 1938. By the way, to bring in the fact that there really isn't a trilogy of Indiana Jones, is actually a fourth film. What year was the fourth film in? This is something I was asked a few days ago, and I don't actually remember. I knew it was in the 50s, but I don't remember exactly when in the 50s.
I want to say 55, but that's a shot in the dark.
Yeah, I can't think of what it is either. Because that's the one film where they tell you where they are, but they don't actually tell you the year, which they did for the other films. So that's probably why I don't remember anything.
I'm going to go with 56.
56? All right, Kingdom of the Christmas Skull.
Coming out this Christmas.
2008 film takes place in... Nobody cares. I can't find any information about this, so I'll look it up later. So that's pretty much this episode, because we've talked for a while. I've lost track of time, to be honest. This beer is really good. Is there anything else we want to talk about aside from the mortality of Indiana Jones?
Well, hey, the conversation could have gone off in 100 directions there at one point.
Well, that's true. I mean, I think we actually settled into our roles pretty early on there. We've talked about Indiana Jones' man stuff. That's sort of what we're talking about. I mean, we're not talking about, you know, our genitals for, you know, 45 minutes, which is probably...
Can we do that next time?
Sure. I'm totally on. I'm on board for that.
Yeah.
Dave, anything you want to say about your genitals? Or
Well, I mean, personally, I was going to say it would take substantially longer than 45 minutes to talk about mine, so you know...
It's very true. It's very true. I certainly hope that... I actually, you know what, sadly, I have nothing for that. I'm like, I have a funny thing to say, but I don't want to open up that Pandora's box of my inner brain. What is an inner brain, anyway? Because that would be just terrifying. Any closing remarks there, Alan?
No, hey, thanks for tuning in on our first episode. And Fuggles and Warlock, beam me up. It's great.
Looks like this. It has a really cool image of this alien spacecraft with a coffee percolator on it. Actually, that's one of those things. There's actually a
Nialetti or whatever it is.
I bought one for Allison for Christmas this year. And, you know, of course, sucking up all the... Now, the best part about this is this guy down here, who's obviously overweight. So, but yeah, the beam me up espresso milk stout, which means that I'll probably be awake for the next 5 hours. So again, thank you for watching. I don't know what I'm going to do with this video, if I maybe post it, or I might want to edit it a bit, but hey! There you go. That's our thing. There you go, Dave.
Thumbs up, yeah, there we go.
Dave, where's your thumb, man? There you go.
I'll even throw in another one.
Two thumbs.
There's nobody home.